I'm Jeff Hoyt. This is Hoytus Interruptus with this week's edition of Where in the World Are Bob and Bruce? Our two intrepid adventure cyclists have begun their 2,500-plus mile trek on gravel bikes along the Continental Divide between Canada and Mexico. We talked to them here in the studio before they left. We talked to them from the road en route to Montana to begin their ride. And today, they finally check in from the actual trail. Bruce Mercer and Bob Horsley join us from somewhere out there. Gentlemen.
Hi, Jeff. Afternoon, Jeff. Yeah, how are we doing, bud?
Where might you happen to be today?
We're in Big Fork, which is near Swan River, which is, about 40 miles south of the combination of Whitefish and Columbia Falls, where we spent the night last night.
We're right on the edge of Flathead Lake.
Ah, nice lake.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Big fish in there.
Yeah, could be. We don't know.
You won't know.
Everything's flathead here. Yeah. I love the sign I saw earlier today up in Columbia Falls. It was Flathead Foot Clinic. I thought, there, that's got a rip to it. Yeah.
So last we spoke, you were in Moses Lake on your way with the U-Haul to drop it off and then head up to the border. To fill us in between then and now.
Yeah, we've had quite a few nights since we spoke to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you go ahead, Bruce.
We ended up that night, we crashed in Coeur d'Alene at the Flamingo Motel, which was sort of great. You could tell it wasn't really catering to our particular genre, but we had a good time there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we drove the van to Columbia Falls, which is a slightly more industrial side of Whitefish, and dropped that off and had a hot, very hot, bike ride into Whitefish, where we went to a famous Glacier Bike Company outpost there and got some supplies and so on. And where we go from there, bud?
We got a shuttle. We had reservations that evening at a place, Whitefish Bike Retreat, and they do small bike rides all over the place, and they have people stay there, but they also do shuttle service. So we stayed there overnight, and then they shuttled us up to the border at Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Dropped us off that next morning early, and we started the ride.
To kind of give you a feeling, too, of the flavor of this ride is when we get to this bike retreat place and we're spending the night, we immediately meet people that are going to be on this trip and doing the exact same thing we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear from the people at the bike company that we stopped at. It's like, oh, well, unfortunately, that trail is closed. You're not going to be able to do that. So the given adventure cycles, the north part of the route we're supposed to be on. So it's this immediate scramble. And you begin to realize this is just going to be what this whole adventure is about. It's immediate. It's like, oh, okay. So we are madly plodding away, trying to create our own path through the wilderness and put it as a plotted route in GPX so that we can follow it on our devices and so on. And it's this feeling of like, we don't know what we're doing. We're totally lost here. And we get this thing hammered together and sort of crash through the night with a bit of anxiety. But get up in the morning, and like Bob said, we get dropped off at the border crossing in Roosevelt and then start heading south and hear from all the officials. It's like, oh, no problem.
Yeah.
That's all opened up now. You just go ahead and ride the thing.
Yeah, and what you forgot is that night we, the first of many, we met two riders that were heading south with us, a couple from Brevard, North Carolina, and we have since bumped into them once.
Uh-huh.
When we started in Roosevelt, we bumped into a couple of women that were heading north, and they filled us in on what we were in for going back south. And then Bruce and I from there went to this small little campsite, which was down this little trail, and we spent the night there, and that was really the last time that we have just been the two of us together.
Right.
Wow.
And then that next morning we woke up and we bumped into three, well, wait a minute, I'm missing Eureka here.
Yeah. let me fill you in on the Eureka part.
Eureka.
As we're heading south,
yeah,
we get only like 20 miles and it's all still on pavement, and we stop at Eureka and we realize, oh, in fact, as we go and we're riding past Cafe Jack's, we realize we had lunch there when we were doing the cross country. So we we have crisped our Crocs within the first 20 miles of the ride. And it's the classic spirit of this thing where it's crowd and they're looking to, can we sit you at a table? And there are these two sort of, you know, somewhat rough looking motorcyclists, you know, with the skull caps on and that kind of stuff. And they said, would you guys be willing to share a table? And we said, yeah, sure. So we sit down with these guys and end up immediately having this wonderful conversation. And it's the spirit of this ride where we get talking with them and like, well, what do you actually do? And this guy, who I was sort of intimidated by, this big burly guy with a skull cap, goes like, oh, I was in packaging. I'm the guy who makes all the packaging for Marshmallow Peeps. And I manufacture about 2.3 million Marshmallow Peeps a day. So it's that kind of spirit. It's unbelievable. Cut ahead to where Bob had us spending a night. We get up the next day, and we get out on the road, and we are stopping to fill our water bottles, and then we meet these three people.
We meet Harold from Norway. We meet Lee and Jeff from Ontario, who we were still with. They're with us right now as we're sitting here. They're going to chime in a second.
We've
been riding with these two guys for two days now.
Yeah. So let us introduce you to Jeff and to Lee. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Lee,
hi,
guys. Jeff.
Yeah.
Welcome to KVSH.
Pleasure.
So you guys are from Ontario?
We are, Northern Ontario.
And Northern Ontario, like in the song, like in the Neil Young song.
There you go.
Or no, was it Neil Young or Katie Lang? It was one of those Canadians.
we're all the same.
Nutty Canadian.
Yeah. So you guys, did you cycle over from Ontario, or was this a bucket list thing for you guys, or what got you here?
We had planned on doing a big trip. We had something in the making for quite a while, and we decided on the Great Divide after seeing some YouTube stuff, actually. And so we took the train from Ontario to Jasper and started this big trip in Jasper on July 8th.
Ah, Jasper, I guess, is the actual origination point. I was looking online, and it seems like this ride actually starts in Jasper.
Well, that's debatable.
Bruce and I kind of cheated on that one. But
yeah, I was about to give you guys some hard time about that.
Bob and I are riding the Great Divide Light.
It originally started in Banff, Alberta, and worked its way down to Antelope Wells. But there has been an extension put on from Jasper to Banff that we rode.
Oh, excellent.
It's absolutely horrible and unnecessary.
Yeah. It sounds to me like, I remember, what was the movie about the RV culture that I recently saw with Frances McDormand, where she went all over the country in her RV, and everywhere she went, she kept running into the same people. You guys are all like RVers with bikes.
Kind of similar. That's right.
Yeah. You really can't imagine how social this ride is. We just stopped, 10 miles down the road. It is super hot here. We are fried. We stopped for a huge mocha and smoothie combo and met a couple more people who are on the ride.
From England.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're all seeming about the same kind of retirement, quasi-retirement age. Now, we're aging, Lee and Jeff here. They're younger than us. But it's still, they're on sabbatical. So it is, it's an older set than I thought. But we've also seen lots of groups of youth doing it. So it is as expected. Bob and I had talked about this. We thought, because you couldn't buy a gravel bike anywhere, where were all those gravel bikes actually being ridden? And they're apparently being ridden out here. So.
But I think the rhythm of this trip is going to be pretty typical, that we're going to bump into these same groups that we're seeing now for the next 2 months, you know, off and on in each other. And
Well, you knew you were going to see other people on the trail, but I hadn't thought so much about when you did your cross-country trip, you were crossing paths with a lot of people going the opposite direction.
Yeah, and we were typically by ourselves pretty much the whole time.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is going to be just a leapfrog.
The big difference here is that we are riding with the cycling community. When we rode the cross country, because we weren't camping out, we weren't riding with it. We were going with the locals. We were, staying at Stinky Ned's Cafe and Motel and those sorts of things. So we were meeting the locals in the towns.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll meet a few, but we'll meet this wonderful collection of people that are also recreational riders out here making it happen in the heat.
Yeah, the trick is you meet fellow riders, and like with Jeff and Lee, it was pretty evident immediately that we sort of had the same riding style, and we seem to be very pretty compatible. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
It's a good thing.
We can ride with them just fine until you get to these steep downhill dirt roads. Jeff and Lee they're gone.
They smoke us.
Yeah.
No.
Any surprises or obstacles so far that you weren't expecting?
I think the biggest obstacle, well, besides the rerouting, which ended up not being a rerouting.
Yeah, they actually opened the trail the morning of, and we were actually able to do the route that we initially planned on doing. So, yeah,
I think the biggest obstacle that I've encountered so far is dealing with the gear. You're struggling, it's maybe too hot, and you need like a hat or something, and you're looking at this contraption of a bicycle thinking, where's the hat? Where's the hat? Or where's my spoon?
Yeah.
And you just spend all this time sorting and resorting, and watching Jeff and Lee, who have a more than a week start on us, they are so seamless when it comes to packing up in the morning. They're standing
They've got two big bags on either side of their back wheel that they can actually hit the bags with a basketball jumper, you know, with their gear, or stuffing and tucking. And we've actually, this morning, we actually went to the post office and mailed back a bunch of gear, trying to lighten our loads.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Every manufacturer of equipment, they sell you a sleeping bag that comes with a special little thing, and that thing fits in a stuff sack. That then fits in the stuff sack that you put the sleeping bag into, and then you take all that stuff and put it in a different stuff sack, and then you put that into the stuff sack that goes inside your bag on your bike, and you've got literally 100 different stuff sacks.
Yep.
So we collected all these extra stuff sacks and bags this morning, and they're on their way back to Julie right now.
Yep. Wow. Now, are you finding that when you pack up, is it more difficult to get everything back where it was, nice and streamlined like you like?
Yes, it is. It's more difficult. It's going to take us a little while to kind of get the swing of it, but it's starting to become a little easier to find things.
Uh-huh.
But the trick is there was not a square inch of extra space to do anything. So just losing a few items makes the packing easier.
Yeah.
But anyway, that'll all sort of solve itself over the next week or so, I think.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Do you have it, your sort of game down? Do you feel like you can just pack the thing up? You pack up so fast in the morning.
As long as we don't change anything, because once we change our systems, then we're like a
ground
zero.
Even if it doesn't work out really well, this little piece of equipment goes in this side of that bag every day.
That's sacrosanct, yeah. You have to do that.
We're feeling really lucky. I mean, this is, it feels a little bit like first week of freshman year in college, where you kind of find like-minded people and you realize, oh, we can hang with you.
Uh-huh.
It was very comforting to have Jeff and Lee, when we went through the area we rode through on our second day, it actually closed for camping. You could ride through it, but they closed it for camping because the bears were out of control.
Yeah, the campground that we wanted to stay at, it was closed because of bear. Yeah.
Ah, great.
So we
okay.
rolled through that area.
Yeah.
Pretty comforting to have Jeff and Lee like bounding down the hill in front of us.
Yeah, yeah. Interference.
You're going down the trail, singing as you go, just to scare the bear out ahead of you. But it was beautiful country that we went through for those first two or three days. We camped for two nights on that trail piece before we came into any sort of area where we could shop again. So,
yeah,
but it was. But it was beautiful.
Much elevation gain so far?
Yeah.
About 9,000 feet total for us. And what do you think for you guys?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. We'd
have to do some math.
Sorry, we're in meters.
There you go.
We did two big climbs and big descents. And the descents have been amazing. They're just, following Jeff and Lee, we just have been letting it go, and it's just amazing that these bikes hold together on these downhill ascents on gravel. It's just,
wow!
Whoa. Yeah,
sounds thrilling.
It's not just downhill. I mean, it's a technical approach to downhill, especially coming down the other side of a pass.
Yeah,
when you've got a road that is full of chunky, sharp rock.
Yeah,
and like Bruce, I'm sure you took a flat or you got something happened to your tire because of this chunkiness. So you have to navigate that all the way down. It's not just a matter of really letting it go.
No,
you've
got to
have control all the way down.
So how's the eating so far? What's on the menu tonight?
Tonight's good.
There are actually restaurants around here.
Oh, okay.
So after we leave here, we're back in the woods for a few days.
All right. So it sounds like you're still kind of in civilization a little more than you will be.
We're back to civilization. Yeah. And I'm only talking for Bob and I, but the first couple of days were a loop into very much wilderness, and now we're back to civilization. This area looks a little bit like Deception Pass, you know, where there's some restaurants and so on somewhere nearby, but they're not right there.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful, and it's by water, and that's great. So,
and I think that's going to be sort of the rhythm in Montana, that we'll be in the woods for 2 or 3 days, and then we come out where we can buy food again, whether it's a town or just a crossroads.
We shop for food tomorrow morning, and then we're into the woods again.
So who knows where you'll be next week when we hook up?
That's true.
I don't know.
Predicting anything,
well,
all the clever ideas about when we'd return and all that sort of stuff, totally up in the air. We don't know. And then talking to our friends here, that you begin to, you know, well, what's your schedule? And then you realize, oh, they're super loose too. And you realize that's, you have to go with that. It is very much, you are present to the moment here immediately. It's very nice.
Yeah, and we're supposed to have like 5 days or so of really high heat, so we'll just have to play that by ear in terms of our destinations on a daily basis.
Any smoke yet?
The first day on the trail, there was, we saw fire crews all the way through that first day. In fact, we saw they were camping out and they were doing some work, but they were putting out a small fire that was local. And in this area around this vicinity, I think they have small fires everywhere that they're just always on, you know, trying to put out. Or
there's such awesome things that you see along the trail.
Uh-huh.
These little different spots. There was a place called Pole Bridge, which to us appeared to be this tiny little town that is basically a mercantile, where you could buy almost anything in small amounts, and a kind of a cheap restaurant that was somehow connected to it. And it is so cool to drive into these places, and they're run by young people. You can tell there's a bunch of youthful folks, and there's just a very positive vibes. There are car accesses through the back to these places, but it is very much, you know, catered to the cyclist. It's going to be very interesting. We'll see much denser wilderness ahead, but it's been pretty good so far.
Okay, well, I will be around all next week, just waiting to hear what day and when is going to be best for us to talk. Jeff and Lee, it's really nice to meet you. I should tell you that my first name is Jeff. My middle name is Lee.
No way.
Yeah. So that's a little surreal.
Meant to be.
But, take good care of these guys. They're a lot of fun. I can vouch for them. Have a great trip.
All right, Jeff.
Thank you.
Bye, Jeff. Talk next week.
We'll talk to you next week. And that's a wrap. Episode 3 of Bruce and Bob Ride the Divide is in the can. Each segment will air Mondays at noon on KVSH with a streaming link to follow. If you missed any of the earlier conversations, search Bruce and Bob Ride the Divide at voiceofvashon.org. And to go out, I'll clear up my earlier moment of confusion about which Canadian songwriter wrote the song Helpless, which has a lyric about a town in North Ontario. It was, of course, Neil Young, but Katie Lang did a really nice cover of the song on Hymns of the 49th Parallel. So in honor of Bruce and Bob's new writing pals, Jeff and Lee, who hail from up there, and also to serve the music editing nerd in me, here's a hybrid version of Helpless by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Katie Lang.
There is a town in North Ontario, comfort, memory, despair, and in my mind I still need a place to go. All my changes were there. Across the sky.
That's Helpless from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, with a little help from Katie Lang along the way. I'll be back next week with another segment of Bruce and Bob Ride the Divide. Until then, that's Hoytus Interruptus. I'm Jeff Hoyt.